The advantage of working the city of Stadiz is that it's the only large city for leagues and leagues around. It gains trade from the north up the river, from the mountains to the west, and from the farmlands to the east. There's a wide diversity of business that happens in Stadiz, and not all of it is honest. But for the area, if you have city business or business that can only be done in a large city, you go to Stadiz. So the advantage is business comes to you. If you have a good network in the city, you can get good references from people in your circle. For certain, there are many competing circles within a large city. Some recognize competition is good for business and tolerate it, work with it. Others see competition as rivalries to be eliminated by whatever means. And this is liquid and changes depending on the fluctuation of business. So one circle of operators with whom you work with in tolerance one day may become the rivals trying to kill you the next. You get a feeling for the ebb and flow of alliances if you've been in the city long enough, keep your ear to the ground, and can tell the signs for what they are. Some circles have established themselves entirely to supply information of the latest happenings around the city and environs, and successfully do so. Reliable information of the latest activities in the city is a valuable commodity and worth good coin. Knowing where to find someone skilled at doing something is also a valuable commodity. And that was how I got involved in this particular mess. I was looking at the bottom of what used to be a mug full of ale and contemplating how I was to get it filled again when I was contacted by a young runner who told me someone was looking for me, but not in a bad way. The referral came from a street vendor named Verkeufer, so it was legit, and I owed him a percentage for introduction. The party in question needed someone or something found. If I was interested, I would make a meeting at the Angry Griffin Tavern at an appointed time, 15 minutes from now. It was a short window of time to get there from where I was, but it was doable. I also knew that the runner, despite my tipping him an extra copper, would try to peddle the information that I was making a rendezvous with someone who needed something. I made an eye gesture to the barmaid, who was reasonably attractive, to try to stall the runner as long as she could to give me a head start. I had an arrangement in the tab with her for various distractions she could create while I made an exit from the tavern for any number of reasons, including life-threatening ones. I left as quickly as I could, trying not to betray any urgency for anyone watching, and quickened my pace once I hit the night streets. I could feel the eyes from watch places, rooftops, and dark alleys as I wound my way out of my regular territory. Some in my circle. I wanted them to see me leaving and which way I was going in case I went mysteriously missing. Others who saw, and I wished them not to, couldn't be helped because I had an urgent time to meet. I made my way to the Angry Griffin. It was owned by someone to whom I was acquainted, and the staff as well. I couldn't call it a place that was friendly to me, more like neutral ground. My presence there would not go unnoticed. So I entered the place and swept it quickly with my eyes, spotting regulars, stragglers, strangers, dangerous packs of people. I also spied a dark hooded figure in the corner who not only was trying to look inconspicuous, but also looked terribly out of place. My client. I slid onto the bench opposite him in the booth without introduction. "Looking for me," I said in a business tone that said I wasn't working the room for pleasure seekers. "Are you?" he began with a clipped accent. "Let's go," I said. "Leave a half silver on the table." "But I didn't buy anything." "That's why," I replied. We left abruptly, and I took him down and over two streets. In this section of the city, I had some solid allies I could trust. I knocked on the fourth door down, two long and three quick. The door opened almost immediately, and the two of us stepped inside, and the door closed again. Inside, the lighting was muted and filtered with red. The madam who greeted us, I knew, could keep most of a secret. "We need a room, alone," I said. "Ah, mistress is keeping some company tonight." "I have my needs, Deandra," I replied, putting a hand on my guest's shoulder. "She gets a half a silver, too," I said to him. "Let's go." My guest fumbled into his purse and barely paid when we were ushered into a small room with scant furnishings, a bed, and a chair with a broken leg. My guest took his hood down and looked around in confusion and concern. He had darkened skin and thick jet black hair cut short, and brown eyes. This is a bordello? He asked, with literal fear in his voice. Yes, it's much more private than a tavern room. Costs less, and we can rent it for the hour. And anyone seeing us together will make their own conclusions about why we are meeting. They can't help but make lascivious assumptions and will want to believe them despite the truth. But I, you are virtuous and concerned about what will be said about you. You are from Kier. It wasn't a question. North Kier, yes, he said, still confused. I thought I heard Kier in your voice, but couldn't tell north or south. And all you have to do is mention Kier to a native and they'll correct you as to which one. Oh, he replied simply. You've never seen the inside of a whorehouse before, and you're shocked and embarrassed. You work in a temple in North Kier, then? Yes, he said, surprised a bit. Which one? San, the revered. He made a quick bow and touched his cheek upon saying this. So what brings you around the Grey Mountains onto our side of the river, North Kierian from the temple of San, the revered? There has been a theft from my temple, he began. He sounded embarrassed to admit it. I have been commanded to retrieve it. I followed the trail to the city here, but in the confusing ambiance of this town, I've lost track of the thief. You tracked him all this way? I asked, surprised. So you know him by sight? No, he said tightly. Okay. What was stolen? It was a sacred image of San the Revered, he motioned and bowed again, made from a precious black stone with gold horns and jeweled eyes. Forgive me, I'm not up on all the Revered of Kier, North Kier. Yes, the manifestation of this particular entity is a man-bull, standing upright, covered in rocky scales like the foundation of the earth, with the wisdom of the ages in his eyes and the judgment of the wicked upon his horns, and a scepter of command in his hands. And this was stolen and carried away? How large is it? I asked. The size of a forearm, he said, and presented his own for measure. By your description, there are a limited number of buyers who would be interested, and also who would have the money to purchase it. But it would be here if the sale would happen. How long were you in the city before you found me? I looked for the wretched thief for a week before I realized it was hopeless for me. I have not rested in my searching. I have slept in the streets and ate where I could. All right, I'll need to be able to find you. So stop looking yourself and possibly tipping off our quarry. Get a room at the Howling Banshee and tell the proprietor that Stiletto sent you. Will I get a better room? No, but I'll get a kickback from it. Your job is to not stay in better rooms and to not call attention to yourself. I'll find out what I can and return back to you if I need more information you hadn't thought to tell me. Now, I leaned into him. About my payment for doing this. I've seen your purse, and you don't carry the kind of coin for this important of a venture. I will give you this upon agreement of our collaboration together, and for the successful return of our sacred statue. He fumbled around his belt and withdrew a small bag with weight to it and set it down upon the bed. Then he pulled back the drawstring top and revealed a small figurine that glittered even the small amount of light in the room. Oh my, I whispered to myself. I think my eyes betrayed me. May I hold it? To assess it better. It had weight to it as well. It was smallish. I could hold it in one hand. But it was a carving of a semi-precious stone and inlaid with gold and sprinkled with tiny expensive stones. Of the figure itself, I was not familiar. It had a human-like body, but with twin snake heads sprouting from the neck and wings at its shoulders that were bat-like, and it sported a tail like a spiked club. It's a grotesque, he said. I looked up at him. It is not revered, he said, though the figure is precious and jeweled. It is a guardian of sorts in real life. It is yours if you are successful. I handed the figurine back to him. You've got yourself a deal, then. The quicker I can find your statue for you, the more valuable that figurine becomes for my time spent. There is one more thing you must know about the statue, though, he said, very serious. Tell me, I said. It is cursed. Should anyone touch it who is not from the temple? Any who touch it shall die. I was skeptical of this part. I figured it was his way of trying to discourage me from taking off with it myself should I find it. This person who took it, is he from the temple? Yes, he said with a snarl. I believe his whole motivation for working in the temple was to steal, to become consecrated in his hands so he could lay them upon the precious things in the temple. He looked around agitated, like he wished to strike something or someone. I moved slightly back while he did. All right. You have your instructions. Go to the Howling Banshee and wait there for me. How shall I find it? He asked. Ask around. It'll look natural. You don't have any rooms right now, do you? He shook his head. Even better. Now, don't leave here until another hour has passed, and pay 5 silver to the lady who showed us these rooms. No one else, just her. So I left my new client and made my way toward the riverside of town. Anyone coming from North Kier would have to cross the river and then enter town from the river gate. From there, they would want to get rooms and then go around town trying to establish a buyer for something very valuable. I don't like the Rivergate district. My circle of contacts is very thin. There's just a certain air about the place that I don't like. And I'm not talking about the fish smell, but that too. I figured someone coming in new to town would not take the first inns that they see. They tended to be a bit grimier anyway, so that eliminated the Purple Pike, the Hanging Hook, and the Bait Shop. Terrible name for an inn, I always thought. Also, my quarry has spent a good deal of time in a temple with thoughts of theft and a big score, so I won't assume that he's a pious person, and probably also wants some lascivious company and doesn't want to be in a busy part of town. Discreet and out of the way, this narrowed my search down, but I still had to put in some legwork. It was middle dark when I finally got some traction. It's usually a good idea to mix in something real with your lie so they have to try to tell which part of what is truth and which isn't. I told the proprietor I was looking for a man dressed from North Kier. True. I gave a description that would fit just about anyone from North Kier. Dark skin, black hair, brown eyes, taller than me, which made it sound like I personally knew this individual. Then I would say he hired me for passage on a boat to go upriver. Not true. And he gave me instructions to where he got rooms that led me there. Also not true. And I need to see him in order to conclude our business. Mostly true. This got me nowhere at the Roaring Manticore and the Tipsy Knight on Fishmonger Street, but struck gold a little ways back on Fairview Alley at the Moonshade Tavern and Inn. The owner, Barton Jameson, I had heard of but never met, and that's best considering the story I spun. Yep, he's upstairs, though I wouldn't disturb him now, Barton whispered quietly. No need. I said, still playing my part as river rat. I'll come back here after sunbreak when it's time. Just glad to have found him. I slid a double copper his way. Much obliged. Sorry for waking you, but I don't want my fare to find some other boat. Busy night otherwise? Nah, Barton said, as he scooped up the gratuity. It's always slow in this part of the quarter. Been quiet all night. Good night. Sleep well, I said as I left the place. I looked up to the upstairs of the Moonshade and saw 4 shutters up there, which meant 8 rooms, 4 on either side of a center hallway. He said it wasn't busy, so I would guess not half full. It was late enough that I knew the proprietor would go back to sleep in a few moments, and there were no lights in the windows on the street side, so my chances were good my quarry was asleep also. After a reasonable time of waiting, I climbed up the side of the Moonshade and checked in the shuttered window of the first room on the 2nd floor. I satisfied myself through the cracks it was empty, and then pried open the window and shutter and let myself in. It wasn't a bad room, actually, as rooms in this quarter go. I decided I might have to keep it in mind. I opened the door and went into the hallway and checked the other rooms. They were mostly empty, except for one that had a couple passed out in it, and the last room on the right. This I opened slowly and quietly, as it had to have my quarry in it. Well, it did, and it didn't. There in the room, lying on the bed, was a man, dark-skinned, black hair, dressed from North Kier, except he lay in a pool of his death blood, the straw mat soaked and dripping. Clean it would be messy tomorrow. I quickly looked around the room to see if there was a sack containing the statue, but I knew I wouldn't see it. It was gone. I looked at the body and the room closer to see if I could tell what happened. I could tell by the wet blood and its still dripping that this was recent work. There was a boot mark in blood pointing toward the window, probably an entrance and exit point, and the two slashes along either side of the neck was work I recognized. Now I had some place to go, and I should leave the room as quickly as possible. I could think along the way.
You've been listening to part one of The Temple Statue, a Dungeons & Damsels fireside adventure by Unchained Productions, written by David Ian. Voice talent by Laura Myers. Sound engineering by Dino D'Elfo. Sound design by David Ian. Theme by Ron Perovich. Music by Mark Rose. The Temple Statue is a fireside adventure short story of the Dungeons & Damsels series by Unchained Productions.